behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean. The Predator season is about to end. They lost game number 81 last night, a 7-3 loss to the Utah Hockey Club. The Predators' disappointing season culminates tomorrow, just as it started, actually, with a home game against the Dallas Stars. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. This is also, the penultimate, that's a big word for you out there, the penultimate episode of Preds Insiders for the season. The Preds Insiders season finale will air next Wednesday. So we will have a lot of time next week to unpack the season that was. But Alex, I was listening to Robbie and Rexro this morning, as I always do. Big fan of Robbie and Joe. And Robbie opened the show discussing the Nashville Predators. And then he had this interesting bit of news surrounding Jonathan Marchessault. This is what Robbie Stanley said about Marchessault this morning on Robbie and Rexrod.
As far as the offseason is concerned, I'm really interested to see what happens here with Jonathan Marchessault. Because I think, just like everybody else, conventional wisdom tells me that with his contract, with the lack of production this year, with the way that this has gone for everybody, that he's going to be back, Stamkos is going to be back, Shea's going to be back, and they're running this thing back with their quote-unquote core group next year and maybe making some additions around the edges. Or who knows, maybe they pull off some big hockey trade and, you know, they're able to pull off some huge move with the draft capital that they've got. We'll see. I can tell you, I've had a lot of different conversations with people both in the organization and connected to the organization over the past couple of weeks that don't really think a lot of Jonathan Marchessault and the way that he has kind of approached things this season. So, I'm very interested to see what happens on that front. And if it's as simple as, well, we're running it back with all of them next year, and that's just the way it's going to be, and we're going to try to make it work. And maybe forced to. Like, I don't know if you're going to be able to trade that contract right now. But I don't think that Marchessault is necessarily – made a hugely positive impression in year one with this organization.
That was Robbie Stanley on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. And when I heard that, admittedly, I was just waking up. My 3-year-old son ended up in our bed. He wanted to wake up. I was shaking out the cobwebs. I'm sure a lot of you can relate. And I turned on Robbie and Rex Road and I heard that. And I did a bit of a double take. Now, there are few people who I trust more than Robbie Stanley when it comes to news about the Nashville Predators. Another one of those people, Alex Daugherty, is sitting in this room with me right now. So, Alex, as you hear what Robbie said, what more can you tell us? You're in that dressing room on a near daily basis. Are you hearing the same things that Robbie is hearing?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. I'm glad to be here again.
Sorry I took so long.
No,
to
that's okay.
Get to... you to talk.
That's all right. That's okay. There's a lot to get to. And also I wanted to say you said earlier that the Predators lost game 81. I had to double check and make sure that's the game number 81 they played. It is not actually their 81st loss, although it does feel like it. It's actually their 43rd loss on Monday. But okay, so I actually, you know, I had been talking about this with a few people, and Robbie and I did discuss this. Look, let me just first of all say, like, in a season like this where your team is just terrible and going to finish third worst in the entire league, especially given the expectations, you're always going to look back and say, oh yeah, well, I kind of noticed that this was going to happen when this, you know, back in October, you sort of look back and you sort of, not revise history, but you sort of say, oh yeah, I can recognize the pattern that was there. That's how our brains work, right? We look for patterns. But I would say that the biggest thing with Jonathan Marchessault, as Robbie described it, is to me, it's about like kind of locker room attitude, and it's about like mindset and what you see every day. And look, I'm not there every day. I'm only there in, you know, times when I'm allowed to be there, right? So like I'm only allowed to be there, you know, after practices or after games, morning skate, that kind of thing. And it just does seem like there's differences in mindset and attitude with regards to this losing team in the locker room. And I would always point to a guy like Ryan O'Reilly as the sort of prototypical guy who, when he loses, he, first of all, he's extremely self-critical. We've talked about that before. And he does everything he can to make sure everyone else knows that he's going to work as hard as possible to not lose again, or to get the next puck, or to score another goal. He really just gives off the vibe of like, I am going to be self-sacrificing. I'm going to be determined constantly. I'm never going to give up on making this better. And I just don't see that same attitude with Marchessault. By the way, I also see that attitude with people like Roman Josi. Roman Josi, who's obviously been injured for a while now, gets criticized a lot by fans for his captaincy and, you know, was he the right kind of captain for this team? I think he's a very good captain because of what he does, to the work he puts in to try to be better. And again, I have only seen Marchessault for, what, you know, 81 games now. I didn't cover him when he was in Vegas because I only cover the Predators. But I just don't see that same level of, like, I'm going to sacrifice everything I can to get better. I see more of a kind of emotional, like, when things are going poorly, they're going really poorly for me, and I'm just going to, you know, move on and go home and take my toys and go home kind of attitude. So, again, Marchessault has an edge to him that not a lot of players have, and I think they like that. That's why they wanted to get him from Vegas, right? But when it goes poorly, I think it's not a good, you know, not a good atmosphere for a locker room that has so many issues and young guys that want to learn. I mean, this team has had 7 rookies debut this year. It's just not something that I think Barry Trotz necessarily was expecting to happen this year.
And you made a good point to me before we started the show about Jonathan Marchessault and being on a losing team. When he played for the Vegas Golden Knights, he played 95 playoff games during his tenure in Vegas. He went to the Stanley Cup final twice. Remember the Golden Knights in their inaugural season lost to the Capitals in the Stanley Cup final. And of course, they won the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago. And Marchessault was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner as playoff MVP. The 1 year Vegas missed the playoffs, it was like the last day of the season. If I recall correctly, they lost a shootout to the Dallas Stars. They missed by like a point, maybe two. So even when the Vegas Golden Knights missed the playoffs, they barely missed the playoffs. As we know, the Predators have been out of the playoffs for months. They've been officially eliminated for a couple of weeks. But we've known since basically Christmas, if not earlier, that this team was not going to make the playoffs. And it is interesting to see how players react to that. But what's interesting about what the future could hold for Jonathan Marchessault, of course, he was part of the celebrated July 1st spending spree with Steven Stamkos and Brady Shea. He has 4 years left on his contract with a $5.5 million cap hit. He turns 35 in December. He has a no-movement clause and a modified no-trade clause, which gives him a 15-team no-trade list, according to Puckpedia. And for those of you wondering, when a player has a no-movement clause and a modified no-trade clause, it means the player cannot be placed on waivers or assigned to the minors without his consent. So he can still be traded. He just can't be waived or sent to Milwaukee without it being run by him first. So the Predators have half the league they could trade him to if they decided to do that. I'm curious what the market would be for a player who, by the way, after scoring 40 goals last season, 20 goals, 54 points in 77 games this season, I went back and looked this up. He had 0 points at 5-on-5 in his first 20 games as a member of the Nashville Predators.
I remember that. That was a really rough stretch.
He had the whole team did, But he had a particularly rough start to the season. I was adamant on the midday show that Andrew Burnett needed to make an example out of Jonathan Marchessault, who was giving away games early in the season with some costly turnovers. So I also remember the issue that he had in Montreal.
Yeah, right. I was going to bring that up as well.
He gave a French interview where he talked about not knowing what line he was going to be on a nightly basis. And if I recall correctly, Alex, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew Brunette put out like an all-Quebec line start the game in Montreal.
He put Marchessault out there with Zach LaRue and some, I don't know who the center was, but it to give them their, you know, Montreal starting lineup that he did. It was a friendly gesture, right?
Yes.
And then he had the quote to a French-Canadian reporter that was in just to be clear, it was in French, so like, you know, it was translated obviously, but I think it was pretty clear what he was saying is that he seemed to not know what line he was going to be on every night. And another follow-up to that, if you remember Barry Trotz, and I believe Elliot Friedman talked about this on the 32 Thoughts, talked to, after that came out, and there was some conversation about it, Barry Trotz pulled Marchessault aside to explain, hey, here's why Bruno did that. And to me, that's kind of a weird situation. I mean, like, why would he have to be explained? Like, it seems to me like it would be obvious that's why Brunette made that move. But it's now, if you remember, after that, Marchessault went on kind of a tear.
He did.
That was his best stretch. That next month or so was his best stretch of the season. So, yeah, there have been issues like that. There's little things in the game when, you know, that I've seen where there's certain elements of hockey that are not flashy, that not a lot of fans pay attention to, but things like finishing your hits, gaining the red line to dump the puck in so you don't create an icing. You know, sacrificing your bodies in order to get the puck out of the zone, for example. These are all things, and I keep talking about them, but these are all things you see Ryan O'Reilly do on a daily basis. You see, I think when he was here, Luke Shen was really good at doing those things. Philip Forsberg is maybe more inconsistent, but he does those things too. But Marchessault, I just continually, especially during the rough stretches, you'd see him come off of a hit, or you'd see him not get to the red line to dump the puck, and it would create an icing. It seems like there's a side of the game that is more mental and physical and committed that is just hasn't been there all season.
And we talked about this when the Predators traded Tommy Novak to the Pittsburgh Penguins. It was an admission by Barry Trotz that he made a mistake by trusting mm-hmm. Tommy Novak to be this team's second-line center. I can only imagine the reaction if Barry Trotz traded Jonathan Marchessault 1 year into a five-year deal. That would not reflect well on Barry Trotz either. So this is something to keep an eye on as the offseason progresses, but I thought that was some really interesting commentary from Robbie Stanley this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next on Preds Insider, speaking of the offseason, there are a couple of positions that the Predators absolutely need to strengthen if they want to be back in the playoff mix next season. We will look at one in particular coming up next. Alex Daugherty and Adam Bingen. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Bingen in with Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean. The Predators wrap up the regular season tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena against the Dallas Stars. A 7 o'clock puck drop, a 6 o'clock pregame right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. The season finale for the Nashville Predators. And Alex, the Predators have some work to do. That's putting it lightly. This offseason to fix what happened this season and to make sure that this was just a one-off for this organization. And one position that the Predators must absolutely address is defense. If you've looked at the Predators' defense over the past few weeks, really since Luke Shen was traded, As you mentioned in the first segment, Alex Roman Yossi has been out of the lineup for quite some time now. So no Roman Yossi, no Luke Shen. I've said this before on Preds Insiders that it would be generous to describe the Predators defensive lineup as a preseason caliber lineup. So the Predators absolutely need to address this position. And over at The Athletic, Chris Johnston published his early NHL free agent big board, the 15 top UFA targets to watch this offseason. And there are a few defensemen listed in this article, but I want to focus on two in particular because I do think the Predators need to find someone to play with Roman Yossi, right? And the Predators hoped it would be Brady Shea. That did not work.
No. No, it did not.
So there are a couple of defensemen on this list that I want to highlight. In the first, number 10 on Chris Johnston's big board, is Neil Pionk, who is currently employed by the Winnipeg Jets. He's on a contract that expires. That's 4 years worth $23.5 million. It's not a $23.5 million cap hit. That would be quite the haul for Neil Pionk. And Chris Johnston writes this, quote, "A right shot who makes good decisions with the puck and produces decent offensive numbers, Pionk is in line for a raise. Among his strengths are joining the attack or getting a wrist shot through traffic for teammates to tip or collect rebounds. While there may be some modest concerns about his defensive impacts, Pionk is logging more than 22 minutes per night on the NHL's best regular season team. Expect the Jets to try and make something work to keep him in Winnipeg." Now, we hear that a lot, right? But Neil Pionk, as it says in the blurb there, he's in line for a raise.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Neil Pionk wants to see what else is out there. So if you're looking for someone who can play with Roman Yossi so that Roman Yossi can play on his strong side, on his left hand, what do you make of Neil Pionk as an option for the Predators and free agents?
I do like that option. When I look at the free agent defensive options that are out there, he's definitely one that stands out. I just come back to, you know, how willing is Barry Trotz going to be to spend even more money this year? Because he spent a lot last year, and he knows he's got to fix some things. But, I mean, I think he also knows at this point you can't buy a good team in free agency. Pionk has an offensive ability that I think they could use on the back end. Without sacrificing too much defense, you know, he's played 20 minutes a night since he's been in the league when he first came in with the Rangers. Very consistently 30 to 40 points a year, which is like, you know, that, you know, I think they would gladly have Brady Shea take those numbers, but clearly that's, you know, not going to happen every year. I think Brady Shea is Brady Shea is considered more of a second pairing, maybe even just a complimentary piece at this point, which is rough considering his salary amount. But Pionk would be a good one. I know you've probably got some others on there. I think there's some cheaper options that they could go with that aren't necessarily offensively helpful but could be good defensively.
Let's go through them now. Who comes to mind for you?
So I like Nick Perbix with Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good defensive guy. He's right-handed. He could play with Roman Yossi. He's big. He's physical. Offensively, you know, he chips in a few points here and there, but I think he's a good young player. He's 26. So I think that would be the main one that sticks out to me. There are some older, cheaper options.
Eric Johnson.
Eric Johnson would be an older option. Orlov would be another one, Dmitry Orlov, but he plays on the left side. So
Jan Ruda.
Jan Ruda would be good. Cody Ceci. I mean, he would be relatively cheap.
Cody Ceci. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Cody Ceci is a lightning rod wherever he goes.
He certainly is. And again, these are cheaper options.
Right.
So, like, obviously, like you said.
If you have Pionk, Cody Ceci playing top pairing minutes with Roman Yossi, you've got problems.
Yeah, but probably so. But again, he would be half the cost of Neil Pionk, right?
Yes.
You get what you pay for. So, Perbix would be the one that I like the most. I think he's got some physical ability. I think it's possible that in Tampa he shined because Tampa has a really good, you know, defensive group. But I would like to see what that looked like. But those are the ones that I think of.
The other defenseman on this list The top two, by the way, are left-handed. Vladislav Gavrikov, who plays on LA's top pair, if I'm not mistaken. And LA, of course, the top defensive team in the NHL. And then Ivan Provorov, also left-handed. He's with Columbus right now. But the other right-handed defenseman on this list, and I don't anticipate the Predators making a run at this player because of what we saw last summer, but Aaron Ekblad is a unrestricted free agent. Now, Ekblad has been out of the lineup for the past month or so. He was suspended 20 games in March without pay for violating the NHL and NHL Players Association's policy on performance-enhancing drugs. He said it was an inadvertent mistake. He can't return to the lineup until Game 3 of Florida's first-round playoff series. But remember, the Florida Panthers traded for Seth Jones, and they have him on a reduced contract because Chicago or somebody retained salary. I can't recall if there was a third team involved in that trade, but they got him at a reduced salary because of some salary retention. Ekblad is interesting because, you know, Ekblad has been playing on a pair with Gustav Forsling, which was an excellent pair for the Florida Panthers en route to their Stanley Cup win last year. And I'm really curious what Ekblad could get on the open market. Chris Johnston writes, quote, "Still relatively young and already with nearly 800 total NHL games on his resume, Ekblad is a bit of a polarizing player among scouts. The fact that he chews through minutes as a top-pairing right-shot defenseman should make him incredibly valuable, especially since his resume includes a Stanley Cup in 2024. Not only is he big and strong, but he's also a good passer who has consistently put up solid offensive numbers throughout his career. However, there are some concerns out there about how well Ekblad's game will age. He's also been plagued by injuries in recent years and is currently serving a 20-game suspension for violating the league and the Player Association's performance-enhancing substance program policy."
My biggest issue with Ekblad is the availability, the health-wise. He has not played 82 games in a season since 2019. He has missed times with injuries. Of course, there were some COVID seasons in there. I understand that. But he's not played a full season, I guess what I'm saying. He does have familiarity with Brunette. I mean, Brunette was the interim pretty much full head coach that season 2022-2023. But again, availability, they don't want to go sign a guy that they pay a lot of money to that can't play. And he does have injuries. He's 56. Obviously this issue this year is different because of the suspension, but 51 last year, 71 the year before, 61, 35 was this COVID shortened year, 67. So like he's missed some time, but yeah, right-handed shot defenseman that plays 25 minutes a night or 22, almost 23 minutes a night. Would be a luxury. I mean, I don't know what his contract number would look like. He made $7.5 million on this contract, so presumably a pay increase from that. Or do they really want to go sign a guy like him for $9 million, $10 million? Like, I don't think so.
No, they absolutely do not. But defense is something that is of grave concern, or should be of grave concern for the Predators. Jesse Granger, who reports on the Golden Knights for The Athletic. Remember, the Predators were in Vegas last weekend. He tweeted this during the game. Quote, "This defensive performance by Nashville is one of the worst I've seen all year in the NHL. Their lack of coverage in front of the net is shocking." So we've known that the Predators' defenses have been bad. And you also have to keep in mind, as we mentioned, the players who are not in the lineup. Roman Josi hasn't been in the lineup for God knows how long now. Luke Shen, despite his faults, is a steady hand. He's gone. So you're relying on Brady Shea and Nick Blankenberg and Jordan Osterley.
Justin Barron.
Again, a preseason caliber defensive lineup for the Predators over the past few weeks. So you do have to take it all with a grain of salt. But I feel like these defensive coverage issues,
they need to be addressed.
They need to be addressed. And they precede the injuries that the Predators had on the blue line.
That's a good point. Yeah, they definitely were still having defensive issues before they lost Roman Josi, before they traded Luke Shen. So, yeah, they've got to solve it. And Barry Trotz, after the trade deadline, said that they will go into this offseason looking to upgrade on defense again. And so he knows He knows that that's a big issue. And if you don't have a good, solid defense on the back end, no matter how your offense looks, you will not win many games.
Absolutely not. So the Predators, we'll see how they attack free agency this offseason. Barry Trotz has said that he does not anticipate breaking out the checkbook in the same way he did a year ago, which, again, I don't blame him for wanting to go a different route after what we saw this past season or this season, because it's not over. Although it's been effectively over, it's not over. It's over after tomorrow night when the Predators host the Dallas Stars at Bridgestone Arena to conclude the 2024-2025 season. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Alex mentioned this before, a lot of NHL debuts for the Nashville Predators this season. We had another one on Monday night. We'll talk about that. Coming up next, Alex Daugherty, Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined by Alex Daugherty this week. The season finale for the Nashville Predators is tomorrow night against the Dallas Stars. The season finale of Preds Insiders will be next Wednesday, April 23rd, as we wrap up the season that was, and it was bad. We all know it. We lived it. It sucked. But one thing that didn't suck for Ryan Ufko last night, he made his NHL debut on the blue line. He was paired with Mark Delgaiso. I want to give a shout-out to our old friend Nick Kieser, who shared this information with me, that Ufko was the seventh Predators player to make his NHL debut this season. Zachary Leroux, Joachim Kemmel, Fedor Svechkov, Ozzie Weisblatt, Adam Wilsby, and Matthew Wood. So seven debuts for the Nashville Predators this season as they get a look at the future of the organization. Ufko, by the way, played 15:37 in his NHL debut in the Predators' 7-3 loss to the Utah Hockey Club on Monday night at Bridgestone Arena.
And by the way, can I add something?
Sure.
This is the fourth time in the franchise history that they've had seven debuts in one season.
When was the last time?
It ties a franchise record. The 2012-2013 lockout shortened season.
Do you happen to have the names of
the
players?
Let's
hear it.
Would you like to guess any of them?
2012-2013?
I mean, there's one big one.
That's before my time here, so...
So, Phil Forsberg is the big one.
Okay.
He actually debuted right when he got here. Victor Bartley, Taylor Beck, Austin Watson, Daniel Bong. Of course, everyone's favorite, Daniel Bong. Kevin Henderson and Victor Rask. So, not... I mean, there's some good ones in there. I mean, Austin Watson was a good player here. Obviously, Philip Forsberg. Victor Bartley had a moment. The rest of those guys didn't really do much, but... You know, there you go. And then it also happened 2003-04. Some names there: Dan Hamhuis, Jordan Tutu, Marek Zdlitsky. And then in the inaugural season, they had seven debuts. Kimmo Timonen was one of them. David Legwand was another.
So seven NHL debuts for the Nashville Predators. Let's start with Ryan Ufko, the latest of the group. What did you make of his debut last night?
I think he struggled early on. I think that was, I mean, I. Whenever you have a rookie debut, you kind of watch them a little closer, so they're the things that they mess up on are going to be exaggerated. He definitely had a couple of welcome to the NHL moments. I think he got just completely laid out by McBain behind the net at one point. He had a turnover that almost resulted in a goal. He had an errant pass that resulted in a 2-on-1.
You suck, McBain!
But
I had to get my Simpsons reference in there somehow.
Okay. But I think he got better, and I think he probably needed a debut like that in order to see, like, here's what this feels like, here's what this looks like. Ufko, I think, is going to need some more time. I think he's going to have to. I don't know what his ceiling really would be for this team. I think he could be a fringe top six guy. I mean, I think he could be a guy that if they have injuries that he comes in and he can do some things. But on the top, on the high end. Maybe he develops into kind of an Alex Carrier type, where he finds a way to grow in the league and develop, and then finds a way into a top four role at some point down the road. But long way to go. It's going to be a while before Ryan Ufko really makes an impact on this team.
So of those seven Predators players who have made their NHL debuts this season, Ufko, LaRue, Kemmel, Svechkov, Weisblatt, Willsby, and Wood, understanding that some of those players have played far more games than others, which of those seven players are you most confident in that they will become key members of this franchise moving forward?
I think there's two. I have two that I think are going to be pieces that move that are pretty important for this team moving forward. I think that the first one is Adam Willsby, actually. Adam Willsby, in just 23 games, really showed some very impressive stuff on the ice. I think his ability to handle the defensive end and the physicality of it, and then also, you know, be a guy that can create some offense. He only had 5 points in 23 games, but you know, I think Adam Willsby's one, and then I think the other one is Svechkov. Svechkov has had some moments where he looks like a first round talent, and then some moments where he looks like he needs to learn a lot. But the thing with Svechkov is his defensive game is already pretty strong, and you know that Brunette is not going to put a guy out there that thinks he can't handle the defensive end, so he can do that. Will Svechkov turn it? I think Svechkov is probably going to be a third line center in this league. I think that's what he's going to be. And then Willsby, kind of like a, you know, maybe a top four guy with a high. I mean, Willsby could eventually turn into an Ekholm type. He's not quite the size of Ekholm, but like a guy that you really rely on physically on the back end that can also play offensively. So those are the two. After that, you know, I mean, LaRue is good. How good is he going to be? And then Matthew Wood, we have no idea. I mean, we have not really seen what he can do yet. And then the others.
But he's been given an opportunity, Matthew Wood, to play with top line players.
Yeah, yeah. He played last night with the Stamkos and Michael Bunting, right?
I told Keezer last week that Predators fans are getting the full Michael Bunting experience. In his time with the Predators, the types of goals he's been scoring, the amount of penalties he's been taking, the scrums he's involved in.
So, would you agree with that? Would you pick other options? The question on which of those seven debuts would be the biggest impact going forward?
I think so. With Svechkov in particular, the way you described what you think his ceiling might be, there are two comps. Predators comps that come immediately to mind. And you tell me if I'm cuckoo bananas for thinking this. The first was Colton Sissons plus. Like, I think that Svechkov could fill the role that Colton Sissons has filled on this team for a better part of a decade once Colton Sissons moves on.
A player who can
slot in on any line. You can trust him in defensive situations. You know, you would hope that Svechkov has a little bit more pop offensively than Sissons has had in his career. The other one that came to mind was Mikhail Granlund. I'm wondering if Svechkov could fill a role similar to Granlund, especially when John Hines was the coach. We saw when Hines took over that Granlund became his most trusted forward. And we saw some impressive offensive seasons from Granlund, but we know that Granlund can play on both ends. So those were the two that came to mind immediately for me.
Yeah.
Are either of them far-fetched to you?
No, I think that's great. I think he's probably closer to Colton Sissons than Granlund, especially offensively. But yeah, and I don't think you'd be, now other than the fact that he's a first-round talent, or first-round draft pick, and he was taken somewhere in the middle, like 18, 19, somewhere
Svechkov?
In there. Yeah.
Svechkov was the 19th overall pick in 2021.
So 19th overall, like, I mean, that's, do you want to get a third line center out of first round? I mean, there's plenty of first round talent that doesn't even make the league. So it's hard to place the value once you get to the kind of later end of the first round. If he was a, you know, number two overall and he was a third line center, then you'd feel bad about it. But I think overall, if he turns out to be a Colton Sissons and has that similar kind of, you know, glue guy that can swing and play center and also play wing and play on the penalty kill and power play if you need him. I think that's fine. That's a good impact. He does have to get better on faceoffs. He is Sissons has really stuck around in the league. One of the reasons is because he's an excellent faceoff center, faceoff winner. Svechkov is not there yet. He needs a lot of work to get better on faceoffs.
What do you think the Predators comp is for Zachary LaRue? Like, which Predators player, past or present? It might be Michael Bunting, right?
Yeah, right.
But is there a Predators comp that you see in Zachary LaRue?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious one to me is Jordan Tutu. I don't know that he has the offensive skill that the Jordan Tutu did, which is strange because Jordan Tutu, when he came in, was not seen as that. He kind of turned in. I think he had a 20-goal season 1 year. I think that's it. Maybe that's the best comp. But I think he could also become maybe a little bit more of a Craig Smith type, like a guy that just shoots a lot and uses his speed to try to, you know, disrupt plays. But that's about it. I don't think – certainly not anything above a Craig Smith and probably more of a Jordan Tutu, maybe 10, 12, 14 goals a year and plays penalty kill, gets a lot of penalty minutes, and disrupts on the kind of fourth line role.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, I was reminded yesterday, Alex, that we're not going to have playoff hockey in Nashville this spring. I'll explain why it came to mind for me yesterday. But I also do want to take a look at some of the confirmed first-round playoff series we have when the Stanley Cup playoffs start in just a matter of days. We'll do that next. Alex Daugherty, Adam Vingan, this is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here with Alex Daugherty from the Tennessean. The Predators wrap up their regular season tomorrow against the Dallas Stars at Bridgestone Arena at 7 o'clock. So, Alex, yesterday, we've known that the Predators have been out of the playoffs now for months. But yesterday, it really hit me that we're not going to have playoff hockey in Nashville as I was making my way to the arena for morning skate and the midday show. It was in the 80s. It was sunny. I was wearing shorts to the rink. It was that playoff weather. And it really hit me yesterday that we're not going to have playoff hockey in Nashville, which is disappointing. But I am still going to be watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's my favorite, one of my favorite times of the year. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we only have two confirmed playoff series at the moment. I think it can change, but I believe we only have two. Some of them are basically confirmed,
yeah,
but I believe there are only two that are confirmed that we know are going to happen. And I want to talk about those series, and then we can look at some of the other series that probably will happen. Both of the confirmed first-round playoff series are in the Western Conference. Let's start in the Central Division. The Dallas Stars will take on the Colorado Avalanche in the first round of the playoffs. The Winnipeg Jets winning the division, winning the President's Trophy. They avoid that dreaded 2-3 matchup in the Central Division. So Dallas and Colorado in the first round of the playoffs. I saw this note from Sean Shapiro, who covered the Stars for a long time. Miro Heiskanen has been out for some time, and I believe there was this thought that he wasn't going to be ready for the first round of the playoffs. But Sean Shapiro tweeted this yesterday, quote, got some clarification from Jim Nill on the recent Heiskanen report / wording. Heiskanen was never, quote unquote, not expected for the first round. He will not play game one versus the Avalanche, but he is hopeful to play in the series, which is gigantic.
Yeah, that's
because
big.
If the Stars don't have Heiskanen, I don't think they can defend the Avalanche. I think that if Heiskanen is out of the series for any significant length of time, I wonder if you could see the Avalanche do to the Stars what they did to the Jets a year ago and just run them off the ice offensively. But this is the nature of this playoff format. Two teams that could easily be in the Stanley Cup final are going to face off in the first round. Your initial thoughts on Stars Avalanche round one?
It's the Mikko Rantanen Bowl, baby.
Oh, how could I forget that? How could I forget that storyline?
That is going to be the most exciting part to me.
Absolutely.
How does Mikko Rantanen play against his old team, now with the Dallas Stars, of course? And, you know, I do think you've got a point that the Avalanche could really challenge Dallas, especially because Dallas has kind of fallen off. I think they've lost a few in a row, I think. Yeah, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10. So Dallas is maybe in that little bit of a coasting phase, which is not what you want to be in. However, I just looked at this. Dallas, with one game to play, has just as many goals this year as Colorado does. 276 goals. Colorado has 277. So as good as the Colorado Avalanche offense is with Nathan McKinnon and Cale Makar, Dallas with all the guys that they have, including Mikko Rantanen, and of course we know Matt Duchene, just as good. And if and their defense and goaltending has been much better. So I think I've got to go with Dallas here. I think they're the better team. I think I picked them to go to the Western Conference Final at the beginning of the year. And I like Dallas to come away with a win, especially with the additions they made at the trade deadline.
The Stars' top pair in their game against the Red Wings last night was Ilya Lyubushkin and Matt Dumba. Now, I don't know if they were resting players, perhaps. They have Cody Ceci on their second pair. That defense...
Future Predator?
That defense looks a little iffy. But let me read to you the Stars' top three lines last night. Jason Robertson, Roope Hintz, Evgeny Dadonov, Mikhail Granlund, Matt Duchene, and Maverick Bork, Jamie Benn, Wyatt Johnston, and Mikko Rantanen.
That's the top nine. That's amazing.
That top nine. Also, shout out to Colin Blackwell, still going strong in the fourth line for the Dallas Stars. Yep. Big fan of Colin Blackwell. Super nice guy. So Dallas, Colorado in the first round. Another first round matchup. It's not Groundhog Day. The Kings and the Oilers.
And when you see that top nine, I mean, look, the top six for Colorado is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom six is not as good as what Dallas has to offer, especially if Mikko Rantanen is in their bottom six. That's pretty incredible. I mean, I do like Dallas in the series.
Oilers and Kings for the fourth year in a row to open the playoffs. It's the second time, by the way, in the NHL's expansion era, which started in 1967, that two teams will meet in the opening round of the playoffs 4 years in a row. The Oilers have won the series in each of the previous 3 years, but the Kings will have home ice advantage this time. The Kings did not have home ice advantage in the previous three series. The Kings 31-5-4 on home ice this season at Crypto.com Arena. You know, the question for this series, of course, is the Kings are an elite defensive team, but they were also an elite defensive team last year, and the Oilers, their firepower, overtook the Kings' defense. My question with the Kings is always, can they score enough? Mm-hmm. I know that they can defend. Darcy Kemper has had a really good season in net for the Kings, but can they keep up with Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, etc.? One piece of news that broke yesterday that will play a big role in this series is that Mattias Ekholm will not play in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs because of an injury. So no Ekholm at all in the first round. He and Evan Bouchard have been an outstanding pair for the Oilers since Ekholm was traded from the Predators to the Oilers. That's a huge loss. Maybe that helps facilitate some offense for the LA Kings, but I always wonder, do the Kings have the offense to keep up with the Oilers despite having an elite defense?
I think this is the year that the Kings can I think it's the year. And similar to the Dallas Avalanche series, I think it's about depth and sort of matchups. I mean, obviously, the Oilers are going to get a lot of goals out of McDavid and Draisaitl, but like, I just think that the depth of the Kings is much better than you'd think. I mean, Quentin Byfield has had a great year. Warren Fogle, former Oiler, has been very good for them. Alex Laferriere, I think I should say that.
Not to be confused with Alex Lafreniere,
right.
From the New York Rangers. Right. Very confusing.
And their defense is just massively better than at Edmonton's. If they can get a couple, like if they go out in the first game, I just said the Kings host the Oilers.
Yes.
And say they shut them out 3-0, then all of a sudden the people get worried up there in Edmonton, like, oh gosh, what's going to happen here? We went to the Stanley Cup final last year, and now we're not even going to get out of the first round. I could see a world in which the Kings just blow them out and maybe win in 4 or 5 games. I think the Kings could do it this year. Now, let me also add this. I think I've said this 3 years in a row now that the Kings would beat the Oilers in the first round. So it's a little bit like that meme where it's like girl has a coma and wakes up and is a different person and falls in love with the same boyfriend. And so like I'm ready to be wrong, but I do think the Kings got a chance this year.
So we're looking at some of the other quickly. We'll look at some of the other expected first round series, the Battle of Ontario, Toronto, and Ottawa, which will be epic. Can't wait to watch that. At the moment, the Canadiens are expected to play the Capitals in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A battle of Florida between Tampa Bay and Florida in the 2-3 matchup in the Atlantic. Carolina and New Jersey in the series I care the least about on paper. In the Metropolitan Division, we mentioned Dallas and Colorado, Los Angeles and Edmonton. The wild card situation in the Western Conference is still undecided. The Wild, Blues, and Flames are still in the mix. Based on the standings today, the Blues would take on the Jets. The Wild would take on the Golden Knights in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And Utah can beat, if Utah beats the Blues, they would knock them out, which is crazy because the Blues were on that crazy run, right?
They won 12 in a row?
Yeah. And if they didn't make the playoffs after that, wow, that would be disappointing.
That would be. But yes, on paper, Carolina, New Jersey. I can't, like, every year, I can't keep up with every first round series. Uh-huh. I mean, I follow along, but there are series that I make a point
sure.
to watch. I don't know if I will watch a single game of Carolina, New Jersey. I'll catch the highlights. There's not a lot of juice there, right?
And there's so many other good first round matchups you want to pay attention to more, right?
All right, quickly before we go, if you had to rank your top first round matchup in terms of watchability, which one is it?
Oh, it's Stars Avalanche.
That is
yeah.
up there.
Yeah.
I would throw two more at you to consider. If Toronto plays Ottawa in the playoffs for the first time since 2017, facing their most hated rival, Brady Tkachuk is probably going to do something stupid. He might get suspended
yeah.
because he is jazzed for this opportunity. We saw him in the Four Nations face-off, how impactful he was for the U.S. I think you can turn that up to 11 in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then, of course, Tampa Bay and Florida. Tampa Bay is being overlooked as a Stanley Cup contender. I just feel like we haven't talked about them at all this season. Nikita Kucherov has been outstanding. Jake Gensel's been a wonderful fit on that top line with Kucherov and Braden Point. Those teams hate each other. I think there are going to be a lot of really interesting playoff series.
That's always worth watching, Tampa and Florida.
Yeah. Absolutely. Alex, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll have plenty to discuss over the course of the offseason. The season finale for the Nashville Predators is tomorrow night at home against the Dallas Stars, a 7 o'clock puck drop, a 6 o'clock pregame, as always, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The season finale of Preds Insiders will be next Wednesday, April 23rd. Until then, for Alex Daugherty and Ian Safar, I'm Adam Bingham. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.